It's Friday. Yes, it's Friday. And this is the Teach Computing podcast recorded by me, Alan O'Donoghue. And say hello, Vicky.
I'm Craig Richardson.
No, you're Vicky.
I'm Vicky.
Vicky Dodd. That's
Vicky
your name.
Dodd.
And how do we find you on Twitter, Vicky?
It's at Craig R.
No, it's at Vickyville. VickyVille. You can tell Vicky's got a bit of a frog in her throat at the moment because she's been ill recently.
And she's hallucinating about who she is.
And it's dropped her voice by a couple of octaves. And I also have with me today Craig Richardson.
Oh, hello.
Craig, you sound remarkably like Vicky does.
It's strange we've got similar ancestry.
Now, I'm just going to tell listeners to the podcast a little bit about who you are, and then you can fill in some of the gaps. So, Craig, you're a teacher in London.
Yep, I'm based down in Tower Hamlets. I'm currently a secondary school teacher.
And the first time that we met was at the York Raspberry Jam in June 2013.
Yep, that's correct, yeah.
And I was just overawed when I saw the fact that you've written a book which is all about how you can program Minecraft using the Python API.
Yep.
And gosh, that must be a serious undertaking because it's quite a big book, isn't it?
It's quite a big book. I started it when I was working as a data administrator in a temporary job. And I just came home every evening and sat down for a few hours and knocked out a few thousand words. And that continued for a few months. And within that few months, I ended up with a 40,000 word book.
I'm laughing because I was walking to a car park and we appear to have walked completely around yes. the perimeter of the car park without actually getting into the car park, and I could see my car in the distance, but it's Friday anyway.
The entrance now.
Now, some people don't quite get the... We're talking about Minecraft and Python together in the same sentence. What's the connection?
Okay, so brief history. The Mojang, who make Minecraft, were so impressed with the Raspberry Pi Foundation's educational aims, they released a free version of Minecraft which could be run on the Raspberry Pi. And because the Raspberry Pi Foundation is supposed to teach programming to a new generation of programmers, they bundled a way of communicating between the Minecraft game and a Python program. So effectively what you can do is create a Python program which controls the Minecraft game to create blocks, to set the position of the player, to find out blocks, and also find out where the player is.
Is it more like the pocket version of Minecraft?
It is, yeah. It's got reduced features, but at the same time, you can do a lot more powerful things with the programming than you could in the regular game.
Right. So you can, it's almost like you can get in and do stuff that, that you wouldn't normally be allowed
to
do.
Yes, it's getting under the shell and just really... manipulating the game to whatever you want.
Minecraft, if you've got something like an Xbox or a PC and you want to download Minecraft, I think it costs about £20 or so.
Yeah.
And the Raspberry Pi edition?
Is totally free, yeah.
Oh, so it's almost equivalent to the same price as buying a Raspberry Pi.
Yeah.
So rather than buy Minecraft, buy a Raspberry Pi and then you get the whole thing for free.
Exactly,
let's just pause while we step into the car.
Yeah.
Now, we're in the car. We're not being pursued at high speed by a police car. We're just sat in a car park. So we were talking about how Mojang have released this free version. So what kind of... Say you've never done anything like this before. What would you expect would be the sort of simplest thing you'd like to achieve straight away in Minecraft? Like, you mentioned something before about teleporting. How does that work?
So... teleporting is quite simple to do in Minecraft. You can just set the position of the player in the game using a few lines of code. And with these lines of code, you also learn about very important yet very basic Python code, which is variables. So you can use variables to set the player's position. And
the players, as I remember, have three coordinates. You have the X, Y, and Z coordinates, their horizontal, vertical, and the
horizontal.
That's right. So there are some concepts there that take a little bit of getting used to.
Yeah.
And you could like increment them or decrement them, and that would move the player around in the Minecraft world.
So you could do something, instead of teleporting them, you could make them jump 20 blocks in the air, or teleport them to a castle they've already built. And you can build on top of this so it gets more complex. and add different Python bits so that you can effectively create your own mini games.
One of the really nice things I saw about that was Ben Smith in one of his videos. He has it's like a game where you hunt the pineapple, and you choose like 10 blocks or something,
yeah.
And then within a limited range, Python assigns random coordinates for those, which buries them somewhere in Minecraft,
yeah.
And then you then have to go and as you get closer to that pineapple, you can get some feedback, because you're getting warmer, cold, depending on the parameter, the distance between that parameter and the actual coordinates. Yeah. So, but that sounds quite complex.
Yeah. That would take a few more lines of code, but it is something that's covered in the book I've created. You kind of gradually build up to that. You can use loops, and it's quite a fun little mini game to create. It's shown at quite a lot of different workshops.
So it sounds like what you're talking about is the answer to the question that a lot of teachers on the courses that I do said.
Yeah.
But text-based programming after Scratch, it just looks so dull and so abstract. But you're saying with Minecraft,
it's a very visual way of doing it. Just getting back to text-based stuff. The text-based is good, but after a while, using lots of print statements, it just gets quite disengaging, because there's a few other ways of doing output. But if you want to keep it basic, print is the best way to do it. But it can be, as I said, disengaging. But with Minecraft, it's not much more difficult than that. And it's got, it just makes the students a lot more engaged in it. It's a lot more visual. So as with Scratch, it's very visual. And the kids are also, a lot of children these days are very passionate about Minecraft. And you put its name on anything and you've got their attention.
It's got a hook around it.
Exactly, yeah.
So this book, how much does it cost? Where do people get it from?
It is totally free. It is on a Creative Commons license.
That means you can
download it, you can copy it, share it, modify it.
Why would you give it away for free?
That's a very good question. The Raspberry Pi Foundation was set up to make computer science, computing, more accessible for people, and they. It was originally set up on a voluntary basis. The Mojang made their software available for free. I thought I'd continue in a similar spirit and give this resource so it's more accessible for people by making it free.
So you said, so the Raspberry Pi Foundation know about this book that you've written?
Yes. Clive Beale was one of the first people
Education director,
the director of education at the Raspberry Pi Foundation. He was one of the first people who I spoke to about the book, and we have been in contact ever since. And the Raspberry Pi Foundation say it's one of their favourite resources for the Raspberry Pi.
As Carrie Ann Philbin?
Yes, Carrie Ann Philbin was telling me yesterday that she, any question anyone asks about Python on the Raspberry Pi, she points them in the direction of my book.
So that was yesterday, on Thursday.
Yes, yesterday on Thursday.
Yeah, because today's Friday, remember?
It's Friday, not Saturday.
We've not had the Raspberry Jamboree today. No, that was last week.
I'm in London right now.
So you said the book's free. People listen to this podcast thinking, oh, it's free. I've not heard about this book. How do I get it? So
if you go to my website, which is argbox.wordpress.com.
So that's like ARG.
Argbox.
Yeah. ARGHBOX.
ARGBOX. The background behind that is my name is Craig R. So Craig Richardson, Craig R. And that's just a way of pronouncing it.
So it's like a geeky joke.
Which leads to my Twitter handle, which is Craig ARGH. So if you want to get in touch with me on Twitter as well. You can also find the book if you go to the Raspberry Pi website and just search for Minecraft on there. You should be able to find a post which deals in
Have you already shared the book in the resources section on computing at school?
Someone else uploaded it for me.
Ah, okay.
That was about 600 downloads, which I wasn't aware of until I did thank them. It's free to distribute, so I'm not going to be angry if people pass it around. In fact, I'm quite happy when I do find that people have benefited from it.
So this book, was it a year ago, 2 years ago you wrote it?
Oh god, I started writing it almost actually a year to probably about 10-11 months ago.
Right. And have you any plans to update it, add more content?
It's constantly being updated. The draft which is available online at the minute is actually quite outdated. If anybody wants to get the latest draft, they can feel free to email me. Right. I'll forward it to them.
I think I'm going to be doing that after this podcast.
There's lots of bits, a few chapters which are missing from the first one, some exercises which aren't included. A lot of content's been updated, so it's a lot more thorough. The next stage is to get diagrams in there to make it more visual and explain things in a bit more depth.
One of the things that is a like testament to the power of Minecraft was that we had the Raspberry Jamboree that ran over 3 days.
Yes.
And any time we ran any sessions that mentioned Minecraft, they were full to capacity and people queuing outside the room that wanted to come in. Will you repeat this again? Yeah. So it really is. It's such a great thing. And Craig, can people find you on the Computing at School community as well? Are you?
I'm not very active in the Computing at School community.
Shame on you.
I think Twitter's more of my thing because it's you can just send a short message to me or just email me. But yeah, you can't, I am on Computing at School. I'm just not very active there. Yeah.
Well, Craig Richardson, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
So, now I'm in the very calm environment, which is the head teacher's office at our school, and I'm with our head teacher, Nigel Ranson. And I'm just going to ask Nigel to introduce himself to you.
Yeah, hello, Nigel Ranson, head teacher here at Our Lady's Catholic High School in Fuller Preston, Lancashire.
So, Nigel, you know, as my head teacher, I've been doing a huge amount of training teachers at the moment, trying to prepare them for these new curriculum changes that we've got. And one of the things, a concern that comes up a lot on my training courses is teachers saying, gosh, Alan, there's so much new stuff that we have to learn. I've got very little time to prepare it. My head teacher wants me to teach the GCSE. And they're almost at the point of meltdown where they're feeling. And I mean, as a head teacher, have you got a perspective that you'd like to share around that?
Well, I think things that are new are always anxious. It always creates anxiety. What I would be suggesting to people is that take things in stages and have a large level of belief in yourself. In particular, don't ask yourself, what are all the extra things I've got to do? Try and focus on the excitement of what it will be like when you are able to do these things. And take them in stages because it will work. And I think, certainly from what I see at our school, I think you'd be thrilled to bits with yourself when you're able to operate in this new zone of computing.
Well, I've come to observe you teach a few times. And I remember there was a particular episode you were teaching a Year 11 GCSE physics class.
Yeah.
And it was something to do with potential dividers, I think, in a circuit.
Right.
And I remember watching, and this is like emblazoned in my memory, it was like You asked the children to think about the answer to a question, but you didn't just accept, even though they gave you the right response, you didn't accept it straight away, and you were sort of drilling down deep.
I think this is going to be one of the areas that you can will be really exciting about teaching computing, because the critical thing is about creating depth of understanding. And one of the things that I find is that teachers can too often stop too soon. Enough has been given back, let's say, to do the exam question successfully, but sufficient hasn't been covered to give what I would call true depth and security to the understanding. And I think it's worth pushing that a little bit further. And that's why when correct answers are given, our obligation is still to keep pushing to make sure that people know why and why and why their answers are correct. And I think this can happen very, very strongly in computing as well as it does in physics.
I find when you observe other people teach, that's a very privileged position to be in because you get to see a whole range of... And I guess in your role, you must see quite a lot of lessons.
Well, I do, and there's no question about it. If you're in a privileged position of being able to watch other people teach, pinching ideas is something that is always there to do. I certainly do that. There are some people who I see who are incredibly, incredibly impressive, but possibly a little bit idiosyncratic. So their ideas aren't so easy to borrow. There are other people that we watch and their ideas are absolutely transferable. And there are many such people. So I would always advocate going to watch other people teaching and having an edge of humility because there's always something to be learned.
So So imagine you've recently observed some computing lessons.
I have actually, yes, yes. In fact, I saw one here at our school. This was with a Year 7 class. It's a setted class, so it is the third from the bottom class. There were four like sets above.
Middle, low range.
Low mid ability class. And they were doing work on Scratch, the latest version. And the thing that was impressing me here, well, there are a variety of things. The absolute commitment and enthusiasm of the pupils, they were totally, totally with the teacher. Now, to be fair, the teacher was picking up on the slightest aspect of inattentiveness, but they were literally on the edge of their chair. And to be able to keep that going throughout the lesson, that in itself is very important.
So you were saying about their chair. Is that a key feature? Whether because in some of the computer rooms, the chairs, there's a lot of freedom and movement. And do you think that's a key indicator of whether children are engaged or not, about the movement?
Well, the way that I look upon things is that I don't like a teacher to be doing pointless things. Perhaps I'm stating the obvious there. If a teacher is needing the attention of the class, they're doing that. It must be thought through. There must be a reason for interrupting a learning sequence. And I suspect it should be because the teacher wants to redirect something, take it on to the next thing. On that basis, absolute attention from the pupils is a definite requirement. And if the teacher's struggling to get that attention, two questions need to be asked. One is in terms of techniques that are being used, but two is in terms of the appropriateness of the ideas. Are the pupils actually getting it? So the more the pupils are involved, the more they're understanding, the easier it is to have really sharp attention. But I mean, there are a range of other aspects that were very, very good about this lesson.
So tell us about some of these. I mean,
Well, in particular, when you're doing logic sequences, and they were looking at level 5B work, which is when you're making blocks, and the pupils were having to produce a sequence that drew squares, that drew various different shapes.
So this is like a turtle sort of logo type situation.
Well, it could be, yes. Yeah. But mm-hmm. if you're drawing pentagons and squares, the simplest thing to do is to give the pupils a worksheet, tell them what the angles are for all of the turns, get the pupils to effectively follow a recipe. Pretty much every pupil will be able to draw whatever are the shapes, and pretty much every pupil will have learned next to nothing. And that, for me, is the thing that I find frustrating. What was happening in this lesson was that the pupils were having to understand the mathematics behind it. Now, of course, lots of people might embrace the idea of understanding the mathematics when they have a top set, but it's perfectly understandable, exterior angles and the fact they all add up to 360 degrees, etc. I think a computing teacher should be teaching that and not be afraid of that, because that's fundamental to be able to design the thing. It's too easy to say, well, the only bit that's interesting is the bit when you're actually on the computer. The bit that's interesting is the bit where you're thinking, be it designing, or be it inquiring, or being it analysing in terms of logic. And the thing that was happening here were very clear, discrete sections of the lesson where the mathematical part was being understood. The pupils were absolutely up for it. They wanted to know that. Then they had to implement it. And these they were doing double blocks which had a repeat cycle on it, and producing patterns that were really very sophisticated.
It sounds, though, like this teacher's taking a bit of a risk, really, because I'm just thinking about the old way I used to teach ICT would have been, as you suggested, a worksheet with instructions, make the object moves forward, turn 90 degrees, and then I would have been able to say to you, well, look, Nigel, they've all met the learning objective, which is to know how to make a square. Mm. But this teacher chose not to do that.
Well, this teacher chose not to do that, that's right. And, of course, when I was going round, I was asking the pupils, so why are you doing that? Why does that section need to be there? What would happen if that was removed? And that's where I'm sort of trying to monitor the understanding level. Now, not every pupil could answer my question, but the significant majority could, But what then started to emerge was this process whereby the teacher was getting other pupils who'd clearly made progress and achieved target, and the teachers, you know, very simple thing, just putting a, they all have a post-it, and they have to put their, as soon as they got it, they have to put the post-it on the screen, and then immediately the teacher knew who was there. So like the teacher,
like a high visibility marker.
That's right.
Thing.
Yeah, just a high visibility marker. So quickly, I know who's there. I know who's got it. And then that person is then used as an emissary to go off and coach other people. But the critical thing was they understood the aspect of coaching as well. So it wasn't just as simply, oh, coach, just move out of the way.
Here's the answer.
And I'll type it in for you. That would have been useless. So they literally went there and started talking other pupils through it. And then I could then go back, test the understanding level myself, not in every single example, but in quite a few. And that had made a real impact. So you got some really, really good peer-to-peer learning as well. It was an exciting lesson. I thought it was very impressive.
So some of these things you're talking about here, they almost sound like they would be transferable to other subject areas. They don't sound like they would be unique to a computing lesson.
Well, I suppose for me, that's part of the reason why I was impressed as well. Because you're absolutely right, Alan. There's no question about it that these are the techniques. Too often, as I'm reiterating, but people stop when children give the right answer. And they don't ensure, one, that other people ensure the right answer is there. And okay, people, oh, well, I've got some whiteboards and let's use my whiteboards and check. Whiteboards aren't good enough. What has to happen is that the pupils have got to prove to the teachers satisfaction that they understand. And those are the techniques that I think that our top teachers are really investing in to make sure that it's depth of understanding. Because what then happens is the pupils have got transferable principles as opposed to, well, I know how to do a square, providing I remember, what was that angle?
What was the recipe?
What was the recipe?
Yeah.
And that, of course, is a greater depth of learning. And these pupils are only in year
and
7.
And then you say to them, what would be the recipe for a rectangle or a triangle? Oh, I only know the rectangle. I only know the square one.
Yes, that's exactly. Yeah. So I thought it was very good. And I would say that the reason why progress was outstanding was because every pupil in the class, there were no exceptions, every pupil made at least good progress. Obviously, there's a range of ability within the class. You could quite easily, quite quickly spot some sort of bright sparks, etc., even though it's a setted class. But those pupils were then being used very well. But a significant number of pupils made outstanding progress. And that was seen, partly because of the structuring of the lesson, partly because of the challenge that the teacher put in, but there was an absolute determination to be learning. The pupils were 100% up for it. Then I look out for this. Are there any pupils who are hiding, who are trying to avoid and just going slowly? And there simply weren't. And if that's the case, for me, the credit really does have to go to the teacher. You've got to recognise that. So it was really exciting. I was delighted.
Nigel Ranson, thank you very much. I hope, you know, some people listening to this might be able to take some of those little salient pieces of advice and go and use them in their own. Thank you.
Well, I'll be splendid. Thanks very much, Alan.
So they were two interviews I recorded this week with Craig Richardson and Nigel Ranson, our head teacher here at Our Ladies. Now, guess who's back in the room? We have...
It's Vicky Dard, Vickyville.
Now, Vicky, you need to listen to the start of this week's podcast because you're actually on the very beginning of the podcast, but you don't realise that you are. Ah, well, you have to listen to the beginning of the podcast. Your voice sounds a bit strange, though, I must say. We'll have to go back and listen to it afterwards.
My voice sounds strange.
No, I don't mean your voice sounds strange now because you've got Harry Bowes in your mouth. But when you listen to the podcast...
On the podcast.
Yeah, you'll have to listen to the very beginning. So should we talk a little bit about what we've been doing with our Year 10 and Year 11 classes this week? And then you can tell us a little bit about what you've been doing with CAS meetings.
Yeah.
And the you've had some primary school teachers in today as well. We can talk about that.
And yesterday.
And yesterday. Uh-huh. Yes, in Salford as well. Okay. Oh, we just got interrupted. So we were talking about your year 10.
Year 10, yeah.
How do you feel they're progressing?
We've just started, haven't you? Yeah,
we've
started the task one of the A453 controlled assessment. So that's the DICE task.
The programming assignment. Yeah,
The programming site, A453, the programming. So I've introduced task one, and they've now had Some have had 2 hours, some had three because some were out on a trip of the controlled assessment. And I've asked them all, I've got some feedback about how they feel. Oh, dead easy, miss, that's great. Yeah, I know what I'm doing. There's always three that are a bit weaker, but they've done really
You've led down the groundwork beforehand, haven't you? Because they've done some similar activities where they've had to take user input and then process this user input, do things with it. Maybe they've got an understanding of data types, how to cast them differently.
They've done two example tasks, and it's the write-up, so they feel really confident in doing the write-up, and they've got examples that they've previously written that they can refer back to and how to lay it out and the level of evidence that's required. And speaking to them, I've got one who's planning to do a GUI with his with buttons in as well, and he's well on his way.
Brilliant.
So absolutely fantastic.
It's a much better situation now you seem to be in than when we started at the beginning of this term, the autumn term, when some of them, you said, had no background or experience in doing the programming.
They were really struggling. Now there's just you've always got the ones that you'll worry about who perhaps don't get it as much as others, but I'm really, really pleased with how they're doing. I'm really pleased that I did the example tasks and gave them the examples as well, the exemplar material that I did, and I think that's really, really helped them. Just learning from last year that when I didn't do that, and then the difference with this year's class. And I've broken it up into three tasks, so I haven't given them task two and task three yet, because I want them to concentrate on task one.
Absolutely.
Then I'll give them task two when they finish that. Then I'll give them task three, because I want them to concentrate on the individual tasks.
There's a lot of merit in splitting it up, because some of mine now, they I kind of feel with some of them, they're giving up because it just looks like it's too much. Even though we've pretty much finished, some of them just... They're just finding it's too...
You get overwhelmed.
Yeah,
so when they see it all three tasks, they get overwhelmed, and I've experienced that before. So I've now decided, no, I'm not giving them all three in one go. I've broken it up.
Great.
And I'm really pleased I did.
So with my year 11s this week, we've just started preparing them for the revision programme. Now, for talking to other teachers, it seems like it's something that doesn't happen in lots of other schools, where they get given a programme that says for 6 nights a week... They have like an hour to do per subject. So they get like 3 hours of work to do each evening to prepare for the exams. And again, I want to get them into good habits. So I spent quite a bit of the lesson actually last Monday explaining about habits and why we have habits and how you can build a habit, even though it doesn't feel natural to begin with. And so we started setting that up, but then we had some interruption with... because we've been doing their art exams, so that's a bit of a bumpy intro. So I'm going to pick that up next week.
But getting them, I've never seen the revision plan as detailed as it is here, where they actually get given a topic each week and then success
that's
criteria,
right.
what things
yeah.
they need to understand and how to summarise and test it and test
so
understanding as well.
So I've shared my revision programme online. So if there's teachers who, they don't do it in their school, but they want to run it, then you can go and find mine.
I think it's really valuable.
Yeah.
I think it
made a massive difference.
Results.
Yeah. So one of the things I want to do to make it a little bit more accessible is I'm going to record a little video for parents, like a guide, where I'm going to... So I've got a lot of my resources here to take home tonight, and over the weekend, little video, and I'm going to get parents to watch it so the parents know what's expected from them.
Yeah, no, I think that's really, really valuable. And then we've got... What else? What else have we been doing?
Well,
I've done a course today.
Yeah.
And yesterday. I've been busy. Key Stage 1, Key Stage 2 curriculums in computing and introducing that. And today we went over all Key Stage 1, so introducing algorithms, creating some and debugging simple programs, and then Key Stage 2. So we went all in one day, right the way through with sequence selection, repetition, using variables. We looked at Scratch, different inputs and outputs. We were looking at the Pico boards, Makey Makeys, and Lego We Do as well.
Do you know what? I bet there's enough content to talk around this to go into our next episode of the podcast.
We'll do it next Friday,
Next Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah, next Friday.
Next
we'll,
Friday,
we will
today
do
is
that.
Friday.
Yeah, today's Friday, of course.
Yes,
yeah, we didn't do that.
It's 9 o'clock soon.
It's Friday.
It's Friday, everybody, and it really, really is 9 o'clock soon.
Yeah. Just for this week's podcast, there's a couple of things. I mean, I'm just recovering from the jamboree which you had last week.
I don't know how you do with talent. I really, really
All the videos, those talks are being edited now and they'll be online shortly. And I feel like I've missed the computing at school because I've not been in the forums recently because of all of this.
Because of everything you've been doing. There's a lot going on, a lot of resources being shared, a lot of huge number of events coming up. We've got our hub meeting on Monday
as
well.
That's right, yeah. Monday the 10th of March.
I think we've recruited a few more attendees today as well.
I think we're going to have a separate meeting for primary as well.
We did one and then we were waiting for another one. So we need a venue. We need to get that set up.
So you've been listening to Vicky Dodd, who is at Vicky Vale on Twitter.